Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
March Madness, watching the games and following the teams that have been winning. Certainly they haven't corresponded to the teams that I had selected at the beginning of the tournament in the brackets who were making it this far. Only Villanova made the Final Four of the selections that I had. But, Chris, I thought watching yesterday's last Elite Eight game to determine who got to the Final Four, Kansas and Duke, was the first time I thought I was watching something that I was supposed to be watching in the round I was watching. To me, that was the game that smelled, looked, felt like an Elite Eight game. From everything from the magnitude of the game, the teams that were participating, you knew the players that were involved for both teams. It was a big game, and I thought it lived up to the excitement that you were hoping it would deliver.
Had Jim Nance there, right? That also plays a part and feels like a big-time game when Jim Nance is calling it for CBS. I'm with you. Like, an Elite Eight game, it has, at least to me, what makes a good one is a team that you think is really good against a team that you think might be really good. And there's a threat that the team that you know is really good could lose possibly to the team that you think is really good. And that's kind of what it was with Kansas and Duke. And which one is which, I guess, is up to your interpretation. You might both think that both of those teams are really good. And you got a relatively high-level basketball game out of it where, like, if one team loses, it's like, wow, that team lost this game. It actually, you know, has some stakes attached to it. I don't think any other team that played this weekend outside of Villanova really had that kind of gravity to it where if they lost, it's like, you know, significant. Oh, my goodness, Duke lost. Or, oh, my goodness, Kansas lost. Mm-hmm. Nova is the only other one that really had that. And Nova had no threat to lose that game from the opening tip against Texas Tech.
I know you gave me a little of a hard time for my tweet, but I really thought one of the game things that made this game exciting was both teams made great plays at times. Both teams made bonehead plays at times. And I think when you look back on the game, both sides, if they had lost the game, could point to a couple of things and say, you know what, we screwed X, Y, and Z up, and that's why we didn't advance. And I thought that was one of the reasons why this was such a high-level game to watch, because both teams executed what they wanted to at times, and both teams didn't at times.
That's funny. You mentioned the tweet. I mean, your tweet was hilarious. Your tweet was, great game. Both teams can point to possessions they came up empty, and once that, they came up big.
That's true.
I mean, yeah, it's true.
It was absolutely true.
I mean, it's very Magic Johnson-like on the tweet is what I tweeted. Magic Johnson tweet. That's the kind of tweets Magic Johnson has. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, both teams have possessions where they came up empty, and both teams have possessions where they came up big. That's what happens in basketball games. But I understand your point. Yeah, it was one of those where you had some great plays, you had some boneheaded plays, you had some fantastic shot making, difficult contested shots, and you had some air balls. Mm-hmm. So, like, I see the point you were making. I just thought the tweet was funny.
Now, in the game, you and I think have a similar thought to the game, but I think we both go slightly different ways. You go the upperclassman, lowerclassman debate, and I'll let you explain it. And I go the guard inside person debate. I don't understand how in some of these tournament games that teams with good inside players don't let those players touch the ball, and they let guards shoot you out of games. Mm-hmm. For Duke, Grayson Allen, 2 of 9 from three-point range. Duvall, 2 of 6, and Trent, 2 of 10. That's a combined 6 for 25. Carter and Bagley combined to go 8 for 18.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Coach K. You got to find a way to get the ball inside to Carter and Bagley more. I think not taking it in, not getting inside touches, to me is a cardinal sin for a lot of these teams in college basketball. I don't think that you get down there. I thought Arizona was awful at that, the game they lost. Aiden's got to be active down there. And now whether that's Aiden demanding the ball or whether Arizona is just stupid and not getting it inside to him, but if you've got difference makers, and there are not nearly as many difference makers on the inside in college basketball as there are on the outside, but if you have those difference makers, you've got to go in. Now, Carter, I thought, had the worst shot of the game for Duke, up 3 late in the game, missing a 3-footer with an air ball. Mm. And then Kansas came down and hit a 3 to tie the game, and then the momentum kind of switched to Kansas. But I still think if you've got inside people, you got to let them touch the ball.
I like the Bob Beeler that comes on the show and rips Coach K. Go ahead. Like, keep going. Just call him a terrible coach. He's a bad tournament coach. Just go out here and completely tear apart Coach K.
No, but you got these stars, you know. I don't want – I mean, in the end of the game, I thought Grayson Allen took a couple of ill-advised threes for Duke. But the last shot he took, at first I thought it was going to be ill-advised, but nobody was moving. Nobody was open. And they ended up getting maybe a better look than if he had passed it to somebody else who was covered. But it looked like it was one of those plays that we've seen where the one guy decides to dribble the ball, and it's basically going to be a one-on-five, and you're going to live or die with whoever has the ball. And I think that you got teams out there with a lot of other talent. If there was 5 minutes left in the game, you'd be running a play. You'd be involving everybody. But with 10 seconds left, it seems like all of these guys go to the one-on-one and say, well, we're going to live or die with whoever our star is, or whoever that might be.
The easiest way to get a shot is an ISO when you have a player you feel like can get their own shot. But I have a theory for you. Mm-hmm. I have a theory as to why the specific examples you've mentioned, why it seems to go wrong in these type of situations. I think that we have seen a good chunk of mediocre upperclassmen deciding games on teams that have talented freshmen as an option to go to. You brought up Ayton, you brought up Carter, you brought up Bagley. Those three guys, they're freshmen. They're playing on teams that have some upperclassmen who were doing a lot of the shooting in the games that their teams lost. And I know, like, workplaces, to me, that value tenure over talent, they are doomed to fail in competitive industries. And I think, in a way, college basketball, when push comes to shove, they start valuing tenure, guys who have been around for quite a bit, over talent, and that is a recipe that usually yields a loss. Like a business saying, the only thing that's worse than a good employee quitting is a bad employee who stays. And I'm not saying that like Grayson Allen is a bad player. He's not a bad player by any stretch. I mean, he's had a good college career. But if you think from watching that game or from watching Duke all year that he is the most talented player on that roster and should be the one deciding games with the ball in his hands, you're just wrong. The freshman all-star teams, I don't think that they can have a senior guard who has the ball a lot, because that mix just doesn't work, because the senior's going – it's almost natural in the way a college basketball team is constructed, because they've been around, they're familiar with the coach and all that, that they are going to take it upon themselves to think that they should be the one to decide the game, even if they're not the most talented guy on the floor. And there's been other examples, and you brought up the Duke one where Grayson Allen goes 3-for-13 in a game that Duke loses. Michigan State was one that stood out to me. Jarrett Jackson, and I'm not just going to blame it on the players, because the coach, you brought up Coach K, is being one, all right, you have to be the one to direct things at a certain point out there on the sideline. And I think Tom Izzo fell into a trap. He really even didn't play Jarrett Jackson, who, you know, they have maybe two lottery picks, Miles Bridges, fringe lottery pick for Michigan State, but Jarrett Jackson, he's a top six pick in the NBA. He's a really talented guy. He only played 15 minutes against Syracuse. They had a senior, Ben Carter, who went and played 21 minutes at that position. There should be no circumstance where Ben Carter, somebody who's kind of a little used backup big at center, should be playing center minutes over Jarrett Jackson. That just shouldn't happen. And it goes to leaning on, oh, he's been there, instead of letting talent actually be talent on the basketball court. DeAndre Ayton, we said for Arizona, it was just miserable watching DeAndre Ayton just be a non-factor in a game in which Arizona gets blown out. Ayton has 13 points on 13 shots. Alonzo Trier, not a senior, but a junior and somebody who's been around Arizona quite a bit, 10 points on 15 shots. He goes 4-for-15 in the game, missing a bunch of perimeter jumpers and tough runners inside when there's the option of giving it to your bona fide freshman and DeAndre Ayton. So I do feel like this just not a good mix. Like, the best way to do it, if you want to go with these uber talented freshmen, which, hey, you want to recruit the best players, that's always the goal. But it almost seems like you should go the complete Kentucky route of having five of them. Like, I have no option of a senior kind of hijacking it, a less talented senior hijacking what's going on. Go with five freshmen. You know, Duke next year could do that. Like, the way their recruiting class is, it might be five freshmen on the court to decide a game at the end. Or go to Villanova route where your best players are actually your seniors and juniors, where that's what Villanova does. They don't really have those bona fide freshmen, but, you know, their best players are ones that have been around the program for a while, and they seem to be right now the most stable program in college basketball. So that's my theory, is that just the structure of college basketball doesn't even matter how talented your freshmen are. They could be the number one pick in the draft good. But if there's a senior who has the ball in their hands at the guard spot, that senior is going to take it upon himself to think that he has to win.
I can see where you say that. I still think big guys inside have to touch the ball.
Absolutely. A lot of these talented freshmen. Like, the reason that they're highly touted is because they're big. And if you're big in college basketball, you have a senior guard, you got to demand the ball.
Get the best of Sports Radio The Ticket with the must-have ticket app at iTunes or KTIK.com. You can read social media posts, listen to live broadcasts like Boise State football games, featured interviews, conversations, and entire shows. It's an Idaho sports lover's dream. Just download the Sports Radio Ticket app today. Up next, what common thread did Loyola and Michigan have that helped get them to the championship game? And also, the Leonard Hamilton interview. Was he right? Was Dana Jacobson right? Our thoughts. Chris and I both have interviewed losing coaches at the end of broadcasts. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. NCAA tournament. We're down to the final four. I don't think too many had Loyola. Maybe a few more had Michigan. A lot of people probably had Villanova and Kansas. I can't remember a year where the bracket on one side, Chris, was so much carnage, and on the other side it was pretty much chalk. I mean, you get 2-1 seeds coming out, and then you get the two teams that probably some expected Michigan, nobody expected Loyola. A couple of things that I look at when I see these four teams coming. All four teams won their conference tournament, so that meant all four teams were playing well, you know, for a while leading into the tournament. But I'm going to give you something that Loyola and Michigan have done that I haven't heard a lot of people talk about. They both won their conference tournaments the early weekend and had the whole week off to get ready for their first game the following either Thursday or Friday, as opposed to winning a conference tournament where you come back maybe Saturday, let's say, after winning the tournament on Saturday, and then have to head out on maybe Tuesday for a Friday game. Maybe you're a little more tired, a little more energy spent. Both Loyola and Michigan won their conference tournament the previous weekend. I think Loyola won theirs on Saturday and Michigan Sunday, or maybe it was vice versa. But haven't heard a lot of people talk about that. I thought this year that maybe that would be an issue with the Big Ten, that, you know, maybe if they have a lot of teams lose early, that people would complain that the Big Ten hurt itself by going to Madison Square Garden, and because of doing that, they had to go the week before. So not next year, but the following year when the Mountain West goes a week early because of that trade show in Las Vegas. I wonder if that will be an edge for the Mountain West winners because they would go with a week extra to rest.
Yeah, I would say not large enough of a sample size is how I'd say probably more of a coincidence than anything else. Missouri Valley has had this all the time, by the
true,
way. Like they,
true.
This is not new for them. They always have their conference championship game at the time they did. Now, they've
now
had
Wichita
various,
State's done well.
Yeah, but the they've had various great results. You know, some of the teams have played well. Some of the teams, you know, they usually do have a team that, you know, kind of makes a jump. So if you wanted to base it more off of the larger sample size of the Missouri Valley, I will listen to you. But if you wanted to just say one year of Michigan, I mean, might have more to do with Michigan not exactly having the toughest path of a NCAA tournament team along the way. And you could say the same with Loyola, which I still can't believe they're at this point. Like, they were third on my Loyola rankings heading into the year. Like, you know, as far as Loyolas that I was familiar with, Loyola Marymount, you know, the one that's in Maryland. Loyola Chicago was, like, third, a clear third. For them to be able to do this.
They're clear first now.
I mean, it's unbelievable what they've done. And it's to the point where if I was a player on Loyola Chicago, I would start to be upset. Because nobody's talking about us as, like, a reason why this is being done. The number one topic whenever Loyola Chicago comes up is Sister Jean. And our brains aren't big enough and we're too busy as a society to really learn everything that there is about a team. So what the, you know, casual fan does is they, like, jump aboard one thing. It's usually a coach, right? Like, even when Butler was making the runs, it was, you know, Brad Stevens or Gordon Hayward was even, you know, somebody who, like, caught the attention of the general college basketball fan. That's not happening at all for Loyola. No, nobody's even taking over the coach. Nobody's talking about Custer, a guy who's out here hitting clutch shots. Richardson, who had a fantastic game. He had 6 threes. He wasn't missing against Kansas State. It's almost like the players are irrelevant. The coaching staff is playing no factor in this run, and it's all about Sister Jean. I'd be upset. But who's the one out here in the gym putting up the work for us to be able to be in a position to where we had 20-something wins in the regular season?
But don't you think Loyola, as far as what you're talking about, is hurt by the fact that they really are a team? They've had 4 games. They've had 4 leading scorers. Towns and Richardson were the leading scorers this week. Jackson off the bench and Custer were the leading scorers the first week. Now, what if I told you that Ingram, who has been one of their leading scorers all season long, and Krutwig, another starter, that those guys lead the team in scoring in their last 2 games, both victories? I think it's possible that they could have 6 different leading scorers in 6 different games if they're fortunate enough to play. I don't think there's been that one player that, you know, like with Indiana State that 1 year, it was Larry Bird and a bunch of nobodies, where in this situation, I don't know that there's anybody that sticks themselves out head and shoulders above anybody else on the team.
They don't care. Like, I'm kind of like tongue-in-cheek with this. Like, they don't, like, hey, we're in the Final Four. They don't really, they're not seeking individual credit, and you probably have to have some kind of that humility to be able, you know, to make it this far in the tournament, and I understand that. But, like, at a certain point, it is like, the players are out here balling. Like, this is a good basketball team. You want to be, like, for Boise State, it's one thing, because we probably saw them at their worst when they get smacked by 34.
I honestly thought they'd be lucky to win half their games in the league. I know they were 7-0. They hadn't beaten anybody, in my opinion. The next week, they had a game, and then they played Florida in the second game the next week. I'm like, they beat Florida? That team beat Florida? They look terrible. Now, maybe they had travel issues getting to Boise. Maybe, who knows, you know, what caused such a, or maybe Boise State was just that good that night. And it was a game in which Chandler Hutchison hardly played.
Banner time for Boise State. If Loyola Chicago wins the championship and you beat them by 34 points, like, how are you going to celebrate Boise State? Because you deserve some kind of celebration. My question is, you know, when they make a movie of this, because it absolutely will have a movie at some point down the line, the low point in the movie will be the loss to Boise State. Like, that'll be like the dramatic moment of, like, something will happen in the movie after they get drubbed by Boise State. So I can't wait to see how they portray Boise State in the Loyola Chicago movie at some point down the line.
Maybe Sister Jean will claim that she needed to take more of an active role because she, I don't think, came to Boise. I don't remember seeing her here. Do you?
Absolutely not.
One of the bigger storylines coming out of the Elite Eight weekend was the end of the Florida State game with Michigan. And it had to do with how Florida State played it. And a post-game press conference or post-game interview on network TV, Dana Jacobson interviewing Leonard Hamilton after the game as the losing coach. And you've done interviews after games. I've done interviews after games. I can tell you, first of all, interviewing losing coaches on a scale of 1 to 10 compared to interviewing winning coaches, much more difficult interview. You never know what might set somebody off in a, you know, after a tough loss. So I think you're treading a little lightly to begin with, even under the best of situations, when you have dealt with a coach all season long.
Yeah, I mean, it's different jobs. If for those unfamiliar with the situation, Florida State didn't foul down 4. Michigan,
with 10 seconds left,
looked like they had the game wrapped up. Yeah, 10, 11 seconds left. And, you know, Florida State just decided not to foul and let them dribble out the clock. And, you know, it was a topic of conversation because, you know, the guys on the desk after the game, they were like, hey, that's kind of sketchy. Like, usually teams would foul in that situation. And Florida State just kind of seemed like they gave up. But I say it's a different job because, again, we're both our current jobs when we're interviewing these coaches after losses, like, we're the team broadcaster. We're also having them for probably a lot longer of a period of time than this little post-game interview that maybe you get 1 or 2 questions if you're Dana Jacobson, who was the one doing the interview in this situation. And, yeah, you kind of got to get after it and ask the question that the guys on the desk are debating. So I thought Dana Jacobson, like, for the reporter, she's not getting, I don't think, any criticism for it. And she
haven't seen any.
Yeah,
no.
She shouldn't. Because
but she also handled it well, too, when he kind of snapped back at her. She was firm, but she was also polite.
And Hamilton handled it poorly. Like, you can't, like, you should know that question's coming, but I also don't, like, who's going to let you know that that question's coming, because, you know, the athletic people, the SIDs and everybody around, they're busy. If they were watching the postgame show, then maybe they would have had a chance to warn Coach Hamilton, but I have a feeling that they weren't really watching a postgame show because they had all these other things that they had going on. So, like, Hamilton handled it poorly. He threatened to walk, or didn't threaten, but he looked like he was about to walk off.
But he came back, and
after that moment, and the video for a lot of people cut off after 40 seconds, the one that was on social media, so you didn't see his full answer after that. He actually gave credit to Michigan, and he did a lot of things right after he looked like he had a look of shock that somebody had the nerve to ask him about the last 11 seconds of the game. But, yeah, he handled it poorly. However, it is not unique for a college basketball coach to handle a question rudely / poorly from a reporter after a loss. That is not something that's groundbreaking in college athletics. It is another Saturday in the world of Jim Boeheim. It's another Saturday in the world of Coach Calipari. It's another Saturday in the world of Rick Pitino. It's another Saturday in the world of Coach K. Like, that's what they do. They try to act like this is the first time you've seen a coach be short or be a little disrespectful after a loss. Stop pretending. It's so interesting how the media and public reaction after this was much more intense than when any of these other coaches do the exact same thing. Like, Jim Boeheim, I went to Syracuse. He never handled the press conference after a loss very well. That's just not what happened. So there's these coaches, the ones that I mentioned in the group, not Hamilton, they get treated with a level of royalty, reverence. They get the benefit of the doubt. There's certain types of coaches that get labeled as the up-and-comers, but those coaches typically don't look like Leonard Hamilton. It's just really interesting how he was really roasted after this when those four coaches that I brought up, nearly after every loss, they'll have something that's a little bit disrespectful to say.
And I want to contrast a little bit. Everybody praised Tony Bennett at Virginia for his comments at the end of the game with UMBC. And I do think they were good, and he came off looking good. But I do think there's a big difference when you have to do an interview less than 5 minutes, both in the losing situations, both not on the floor, both you could go address your team, and you come out of the locker room. So we're looking at, what, 5 to 10 minutes after the game, probably for both of them. Mm-hmm. The biggest difference, in my opinion, is Hamilton's loss came right up at the buzzer, where Bennett knew he was going to lose probably pretty early on in the second half.
Yeah, so it's more raw, and like, again, he handled it poorly. I'm not trying to say that.
No, I agree. Bennett handled it real well.
Yeah, exactly.
But you gave Bennett had more time to process what was going on. And like you said, I don't think having coaches at the podium when they've lost is having them bristle at things is new.
Yeah, do you think Jim Boeheim would have handled that question any differently?
No, probably not.
Absolutely
not. The other thing I was going to say about coaches, how much more money does a head coach make than an assistant coach? A lot, right?
No, I don't know the exact, but probably a lot.
Quite a bit. Pretty good amount, right? You're the head coach. I've always thought a lot of that money is because you're paid to be the spokesman for the school and the team. Mm. The assistant coaches don't have to answer the questions. They have to help recruit. They have to do everything. But as a head coach, you have to be composed. You're the one representing the school. You're paid the money, and you're paid the extra money to be the guy that's out front. So just some thoughts on that post-game interview. Win $1,000 without having to call Tony to play a parlay. Play 4K a day with four chances for you to win $1,000 every weekday, and it will start on Thursday on Sports Radio The Ticket. You can play at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. every weekday. Coming up next in the update, who's been the most consistent team over the last several years at Boise State? We'll have that in the update next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Ticket Sports Update, sponsored by the Peterson Auto Group. During RX Madness sales event at Peterson Lexus, you'll save up to $4,000 on a new 2018 third row RXL, or at least $1,375 a month. It's only during the RX Madness at Peterson Lexus. Well, Boise State gymnastics team won their fourth straight Mountain Rim Gymnastics Conference title over the weekend with a score of 196.875. The Broncos will receive their regional seating and destination today at 2 p.m. Mountain Time.
And they've been a real consistent team in the time I've been here. They seem to be right there going to the NCAA regionals every single year. Again, four straight conference championships. So the seniors on this team have never known anything but a conference championship. Their big goal is to get out of the regional level and get to the national level.
Yeah, and like last year, they had the unfortunate draw of being in the same region where the number three seed was the host when the Boise State Broncos were number two. Top two advance. After that, you're out of luck, and that was just an unfortunate break. So maybe they can get fortunate on a draw this year.
What I want to see is to be seeded second. I don't know if they'll be that high because I think they're ranked 15th. Yeah. But go somewhere where the top seed is the host team. Mm-hmm. Concede the number one spot to them and see about beating everybody else there to get into the top two.
Well, there's another group of Broncos in action over the weekend. It was the Boise State softball team. They split a doubleheader with San Jose State. They remain within a game of the Spartans for the Mountain West Conference lead, and their win over the weekend snapped an 11-game losing streak to San Jose State.
Yeah, that was a fun comeback for them. They were down heading in. Who was it? The sixth? Okay, I forget what
it was.
Fifth. Okay, I was calling it, but, you know, I don't have my notes in front of me. But, yeah, it scored 9 runs, down by 1, and there's in softball the 8-run rule where if you're up by 8 in the, you know, fifth after 5, so 6th and 7th for the home team, you win the game. So they had a walk-off win by 8 runs, which, you know, is not the most natural thing to say.
I'm watching you online, and I got basketball on, and I have it on my computer, and it was just one of those innings. Base hit. You know, it wasn't like a couple of 3-run bombs or something. It was just sort of a general coming to the plate and getting on base. I think the first 7 reached. But what I was going to mention to the folks out there listening, one of the few sports that's actually good at San Jose State. They're the defending champ in the Mountain West. So we saw, you know, we talk about consistent and good teams at Boise State. Yeah. San Jose State doesn't have a whole lot of them. One of them is that softball team, as they won the league last year.
And Boise State is getting better. Like, the last 2 years, and last year they made it to a postseason, which is like the, you know, NIT of the softball, of, you know, college softball. They made that last year. And they had a pretty good non-conference this year and swept the first opponent. Took a game from the defending champs at home this past weekend. So, pretty good start for Sidney Ball and the crew.
Well, according to Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports, Gonzaga plans to make a decision on their conference affiliation within the next 2 weeks. That's what their AD Mike Roth told them. Roth said the time is running out on the Zags, and he referenced Wichita State, who joined the American just 4 days after the Final Four ended in Butler back in 2012, who joined the Big East on March 20th. Dennis Dodd, who wrote that article, will be on Caves and Prater today at 3:15.
I think it's a real possibility. The WCC today announced some changes in the scheduling where they want teams to schedule better. I think it's probably a slap at St. Mary's and maybe some of the other ones in the league. Then they've also changed their conference tournament format where if you finish in the top two teams in the league, you only have to face semifinals and beyond. 7-10 are going to play the first night. 5 and 6 join on the second night. 3 and 4 join for the semifinals. And then join for the quarterfinals, and 1 and 2 jump in for the semifinals. So if you finish in the bottom of the league, you got to win 5 games. If you finish in the top of the league, you got to win 2. I think what they're trying to do there is eliminate the number of games that somebody that's good in the league has to face against bad RPI teams.
That is the worst format ever for a conference tournament. I'm sorry. Like, I understand what they're trying to do. I would almost rather just the top 4 teams play and just eliminate the rest of that mess. Mm-hmm. That is the most ridiculous. Like, what does a bracket even look like? It looks like a set of stairs.
It does. Yeah.
It's terrible. Like, if you're just going to do that, have the top four in the conference face off, maybe home-sided if you wanted to do that, and call it a day.
Well, last season, the New York Giants struggled without their wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr., who missed much of the season with a broken ankle. That's part of the reason they're picking number 2 in the NFL draft coming up in about a month. But he might be on the move, and they might be without him longer term. Over the weekend, Giants co-owner John Mara referenced that no player was untouchable and then had this to say about Odell Beckham Jr.'s behavior, which has run into some questions this offseason, including pictures with women and certain substances of white.
More disappointed than angry. I think too often he allows himself to get put in bad situations, and he needs to use a little better judgment.
Mm-mm. Is that the word a demerit, or what's the word when the Mountain West issues a statement about something that's they deem unacceptable?
Reprimand?
Yeah, public reprimand. There you go. That's the word I was looking for. For Odell Beckham.
I think when your owner's saying something like that, I think he's going to be your former owner pretty soon. I think they'll get rid of him.
And Beckham then responded to that by saying he's not going to play without a contract extension this year.
Yeah, Odell's trying to get that money. The Giants, I don't know what you can do here, right? Like, he's your best player. Eli Manning's numbers without Odell Beckham over the last, like, 5 years have just been awful. Like, I don't know what you can do. You don't really have much leverage if you're the Giants here. If you're Odell, you kind of have all the leverage. You're a baller. You can play. And, you know, you were hurt a good chunk of last year, but still one of the best receivers in the game. And he really hasn't been in trouble. Like, that's the one thing about Odell Beckham. He really hasn't been in trouble. Like, legally. Has he ever? What's the worst thing he's done? Like, seriously, what is the worst thing that, if you're like, Odell Beckham, he's a troublemaker. What is the worst thing that Odell Beckham has done?
I mean, this whole situation in Europe could spiral pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, he was with the girl. He wasn't doing anything. Maybe he was with the pizza. There? There's nothing clear that came out of the video.
No.
He hasn't violated a drug test.
No.
He hasn't been arrested.
Nope.
Like, he was on Instagram. Like that's serious.
Like,
TMZ
the biggest
likes
thing
him.
Is when he pretended to be a dog and peed on a football.
Or he, like, kissed a football or kissed a field goal net. Like, he does silly things. I'm not saying he's not silly. And he shows some immaturity. He might yell and scream sometimes.
But I think if you're the team, you want more out of your star is what I think they're saying. I think they think he embarrasses them.
By catching touchdowns?
Well, not that.
He's out here catching touchdowns. Like, if he's embarrassing, if he's the embarrassing part of the Giants, I mean,
you
got your priorities wrong. The Giants play without Odell Beckham is embarrassing.
Well, that's true, too. But if he's looking like he's there with a white powdery substance, I don't think
he wasn't doing anything with the white powdery substance, even in the video. And it's, again.
But you still shouldn't. It's not a good look to have yourself pictured.
If the worst thing you have to say about it is it's not a great look, then I still say it's not really a big deal. Like, again, if it's not a great look, sure, not a great look. Is it a big deal? Maybe a lot of these little things start to add up. But the fact is, he in a league where there are a lot of people getting in trouble for a lot of serious things, Odell Beckham is not getting in trouble for those serious things.
But when you look at where the Giants are, if you could get a lot for him, you might just as soon want to blow this team up. I don't know why you want to keep Eli Manning around. I think I'd go back to square one.
And save me with the Giants. This is the same team that supported Josh Brown after all his stuff. It's the kicker of the team. So save me with their high stance of what is acceptable as a member of the New York Giants.
Almost finished the sports update. If you hear fireworks going off today, don't be alarmed. That's probably the owners of the Eastern League, the AA affiliate league for some Major League Baseball teams on the East Coast, celebrating. That's because today it's reported by Anthony DiComo of MLB.com that the New York Mets plan to assign Tim Tebow to their AA affiliate, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies.
What's funnier, Tim Tebow still playing or the name Rumble Ponies?
He was 1-for-18 this spring, and he's a AA.
So he has one more hit in spring training than the three of us combined.
Yep. And he's two steps away from the major leagues.
I'll bet you if he's at AA this year, what do you want to bet he gets a September call this year? Although the only thing is he would then have to take a spot on the 40-man roster. That'd be the only negative from the Mets' perspective. But if you've got people at the end of the season you're not going to bring back, I'll bet you they do it.
Was David Wright still on the 40-man? Because it seems like he can't
play. He's the lone captain this year in Major League Baseball.
Really?
Teams have gone away from naming captain, but David Wright is one of them. Coming up next in Quick Hits, where did the Mountain West crush the Pac-12 this season? And what about last night's interview on 60 Minutes? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
Chris, when is a list so bad that it's good?
When it gets people talking, and I guess this means that it's a good list, but it's good just because it's so outrageous. CBS Sports did a list of the biggest NFL QB busts of the BCS era. Take a guess who they picked.
Manziel?
No. They picked Vince Young as the biggest quarterback bust in the NFL quarterback bust in the BCS era.
He did
era.
More than Manziel's done. I mean, not to say that he did as much as you wanted, yeah. But he played some.
Jamarcus Russell's also an option.
And he was a number one pick.
Jimmy Clausen is also an option. Vince Young was a two-time Pro Bowler. Vince Young was the Rookie of the Year. Vince Young had a winning percentage of like 67% as a starter. I think he was like 31-19 or something with the Titans. That doesn't scream bust to me. I mean, maybe he underachieved.
Yeah.
You can bring that up. Like, he underachieved. He could have done more. But to say he was the biggest bust is just wrong. And a lot of people have pointed that out, saying, hey, this is pretty silly. And it got a lot of traction, probably got a lot more clicks than saying Jamarcus Russell was the biggest bust. Because who's clicking on that headline? CBS Sports says Jamarcus Russell was the biggest bust of the BCS era.
I think you'd say, yeah, I know. Yeah. So who else was on the list? How many did they do?
I didn't see the whole complete list.
But how many do you think they did? 10? 20?
I can get back to you and see the article. But for Vince Young to be named the biggest bust is silly.
Topic number two.
What might be Colorado State's football savior in 2018?
Well, it could be a grad transfer. Remember, Nick Stevens graduated, and he leaves with throwing for nearly 4,000 yards, 62% completions, 29 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. They were expecting to have Connor Hill, who the year before in 2016 actually had beat Nick Stevens out. Then he got hurt. Well, he got hurt again. Second tear of an ACL this spring. So they're going to take a Washington castoff, K.J. Carter-Samuels. He's been the backup to Jake Browning these last 3 years. He's thrown for 27 completions in 49 attempts, 319 yards, 3 touchdowns. That's in a career. He's going to enroll at Colorado State in the summer. If you remember, his brother Austin was at Wyoming and then transferred to Vanderbilt. So Colorado State trying to go the grad transfer route to shore up their quarterback position.
Do you think he would hold on to a 38-14 lead or whatever the lead was that Colorado State had over Boise State this year? Nick Stevens couldn't hold on to the lead.
I don't know. That's an interesting question. Should we try it again, set up the situation, and have Boise State come
storming
back?
You know what? I don't think we should set that situation up, because I don't know how many other times Boise State going to come out of the winning end. I forget exactly what the score was at its lowest point.
Well, the lowest point, I think, was, what was it, 20-some points? But, I mean, bad. I remember it was 14 when they threw the pick six, and it went to 14 points with, what, 5 minutes to go or something. Yeah. That's where I thought they were going to be toast. But what a comeback. And that to me, most important win of the season.
Topic number three.
All right, Chris, what did you think about last night's 60 Minutes interview?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people talking about it, some shocking quotes, you know, some things that generated traction on social media with that interview yesterday with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Yeah, forget the other things that were going on in 60 Minutes yesterday, which apparently was like the most watched 60 Minutes since an interview in 2008 or something along those lines. So NCAA tournament helping to promote Giannis Antetokounmpo's interview, because again, that was the only thing that was worth seeing on there. The Greek Freak, of course, with the Bucks. I think this was just more of a, you know, national profile to people who don't follow basketball as closely and see a name that is that long, and he has an interesting background, and they kind of went into it, how he kind of grew up on the streets of Greece, kind of just out here selling stuff on the black market, and it's how his family made money. Like, he and his brother, they had to share a pair of shoes within a basketball game because they didn't have enough for both of them to play. So they were teammates, so when one came out the game, they handed off the shoes to the other one so he could be on the court to play. So that was interesting. A couple of other things. It takes him 6 steps for him to go the full length of the basketball court. That's nuts, isn't it?
94 feet.
Six steps to go the full length of the court. And he says he's afraid of failure. He expects to get better. He's one of the best players in the NBA right now, probably top four in the MVP voting. So he certainly has a bright future.
Topic number four.
Where did the Mountain West kick the Pac-12s behind?
Well, it was in the basketball championships. Pac-12 had their championship game Saturday night of championship week. Started at 7 Pacific in Vegas, aired 10 o'clock Eastern time. They generated 612,000 viewers. It was on Fox Sports 1. Mount West had theirs on Saturday. Game time was earlier, 3 o'clock Mountain time, went at 5 o'clock Eastern time. San Diego State, New Mexico. They didn't even have Nevada in the championship game. 1.6 million viewers. Biggest thing is, if you're going to have things, have them on a legitimate network.
Ooh, Fox Sports 1 is not even legitimate.
CBS, big CBS, is going to turn around a much bigger pot of viewers than Fox Sports 1 is.
It's not only that. The Pac-12, I believe their semifinal, one of their semifinals are on the Pac-12 network. Like, they don't even have both of their semifinals on like an ESPN or a Fox Sports 1. I found that to be stunning.
Like, they did to me, too.
Their first semifinal is just on the Pac-12 network. They need to do better when it comes to getting some visibility on TV for your conference tournament. You can't get Fox Sports 1 to pick up both.
Like, I would think you could have gotten Fox Sports 1 to take the quarters as well.
The quarters are on the, you know, like ESPN doesn't have any of it. And then the championship, I mean, ESPN might have one of the quarterfinals. I'm not 100% sure
ESPN
on that.
ESPN and Fox Sports 1 alternate the championships. ESPN had it last year, and they will get it next year. Last year, when it was on ESPN, they had 2.1 million viewers.
Also, I'm going to say, as somebody who attended the semifinals the last 2 years of the Pac-12, and, of course, plenty of the Mountain West tournaments, I do think the Mountain West tournament, last 2 days of it, is a better atmosphere than the Pac-12 because that arena is almost too big for a college basketball tournament. It almost feels empty and hollow. Fans are far away. For the Mountain West one at the Thomas and Mack, fans are a lot closer. The arena's smaller. It gets a lot louder. I did feel like the championship game this past year between New Mexico and San Diego State was just a much better college basketball game to attend if you're not looking at it from a whole quality of play standpoint, just as an enjoyable night out or a day out. The Mountain West Championship game was better than the Pac-12.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
I'm sure those conferences jockey for position of where they want to have their conference tournaments, day, time, etc. So Pac-12, they need some work to do.
Now, if you put the Pac-12 in an arena the size of Thomas and Mack, that thing would be rocking.
Coming up next, baseball season starts on Thursday. Our CBS expert, Matt Snyder, will give us the storylines we want to follow. Can he talk me off the ledge with the Bumgarner injury? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Major League Baseball season begins on Thursday with a full slate of games. And if anybody had seen my face at 3:05 when I left the studio, Fish, you were the bearer of bad news. He tells me about Madison Bumgarner getting a shot to the left hand, and I'm glad it wasn't 2:00 because I don't know that I've been able to continue in hour number two of our show.
I think we should have done it during the show and see you like swear for the first time on this show. Like, it's never
I would have hit
before.
That dump button as fast as you can.
It never happened before, but it absolutely would have happened if Fish could have told you during the show. That would have been great.
Matt Snyder joined us. He is the expert on baseball for CBSSports.com. Matt, help talk me off the ledge. Do we have enough in the Giants pitching staff to just tread water until Bumgarner gets back in June?
I don't think I can do that in good conscience. I saw Chris just tweet me and say, you can't wait for me to tell you that the Giants are toast. That's pretty true, actually. I mean, coming into the season, as you well know, the one big concern for the Giants was rotation depth and that they couldn't afford any injuries to anybody important. You needed to bounce back out of Johnny Cueto. You needed somebody like Ty Block or Chris Stratton to solidify the 4-5 spots, but now you're without Bumgarner. And, I mean, man, I'm sorry, but 4 weeks with the pins in before you get him out, then you get to kind of rehab your hand to the point where you can throw a ball, then you get to work your arm back into game action. I mean, it's hard for me to see him back before the All-Star break. Then you have Samardzija out as well. You don't know how long he's out until then. I mean, Ty Block, opening day starter. Again, Cueto coming off the worst year of his career. Hey, I like the offensive additions of Longoria.
So did I.
And then Jackson. I like the bolstering of the bullpen with Watson. I figured Valance probably was going to bounce back. But if there was one thing they could not afford, it was Madison Bumgarner getting hurt.
And, of course, he was looking pretty good in spring, too, and it was the last spring game. You know, I'm really surprised that people don't get hurt on the pitching mound with balls either hit into the face or the arm. I'm surprised this doesn't happen more often.
I mean, it is going to continue to happen more and more often. As guys continue to get stronger, and Major League Baseball won't say the balls are juiced. They just continue to say, well, they're within specifications, but the balls are juiced, and guys are as strong as they've ever been. Luckily, there's a lot more emphasis on launch angle now, so guys are trying to hit it in the air, but you're still going to get your fair share of line drives right back at the pitchers. there's just, I mean, they've got to be ready to try to field their position, but there's only so much you can do when a ball's coming at you 110 miles per hour and you're 60 feet away. So it's just kind of it's an occupational hazard. It's unfortunate. You hate seeing guys go down, especially as they're so important, but again, it's kind of part of the game.
Matt Snyder, CBSSports.com baseball writer here on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. And Matt, a little bit of background on this show. Like, I started doing this show with Bob in, 2014? So ever since then, my Phillies have been pretty bad, and I've had to put up with his Giants being within, you know, playoff contention, World Series contention while I've been on the show, and my Phillies has been at the bottom of the NL East. Is this the year where I can start to have the superior baseball team on this show? Are the Phillies, could they be better than the Giants this year?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
As far as contention, this is probably like the year before the year, where you start to get really excited. Like, as you guys know, I believe I'm a Cubs fan. I would say that this Philly season might be more like the Cubs' last 2 months in 2014, right before the big breakout in 2015, because you still got to see, okay, what's Kingery going to do when he comes up to the bigs? What's J.P. Crawford got? Is Michael Franco ever going to revert back to rookie form? Is Rhys Hoskins for real, which I think he is? Is Aaron Nola going to take the next step to become a frontline pitcher alongside Jake Arrieta? There's just and then they got to figure out the rest of the rotation. Like, is Velasquez going to be able to stick as a starter and get that command back to when he was a stud from the start of the season a couple of years ago? You just have so many of those questions, but a lot of them I think are going to get answered in the positive. So I think you're going to be a really fun team for Phillies fans. And instead of really contending this year, it's going to be more of one of those kind of hope-building seasons where you start to look forward to 2019.
All right, so who are going to be the teams that may be the contenders that you don't quite expect? You expect the Astros to have a chance maybe to repeat. You expect the Yankees to win the American League East with the addition of Stanton. But where are some of the teams right now that are off the radar that we might want to look to that could contend for a division championship or even get to the World Series?
I don't think division for either one of those teams, but my sleeper in the NL was the Phillies. I said that in my power rankings that came out today, and my sleeper in the American League is the A's. They just have so much power in that offense, and they have some talented young arms now that the arms need to come around, but they feel like they could kind of do one of those Billy Bean things, like the first year they had Cespedes, when everybody thought they were going to be in last place, and then they ended up winning the division, and they were hot fire for the last 3 months of the season. I don't think they're going to be that good. But I think they're going to be a team that can get up into the low, maybe mid-80s and wins, and that might be good enough for a wild card. And another one I had my eye on was the Reds. I really like their offense, how it's coming around. I love the back end of the bullpen with Iglesias, and if Lorenzen comes back from his injury quickly. But now Disclafani and Finnegan are both hurt, and they're supposed to be toward the top of the rotation. They both missed all of last season. So now I'm kind of falling back on them a bit, just because it's kind of a reminder, like, oh, hey, by the way, they are incredibly injury prone in the rotation. But behind Luis Castillo, they have enough pieces in that rotation that if Disclafani and Finnegan come back and stay healthy, they could kind of be another like upstart, sneaky kind of contender, kind of like maybe the Brewers were last year. Not necessarily a playoff team, but a team that can kind of push some of the powers.
Matt Snyder, CBS on Twitter. It's at Matt Snyder with a Y, CBS. Joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Now, the free agency cycle is, you know, all settled down pretty much to this point. Now, it took a while for it all to be at this point where it's all settled. Now that it is all in the past, what do you take from this free agent cycle? What did you learn from it?
They need to fix the system to pay guys earlier in their careers. Otherwise, the owners clamping down now, it's just not going to work. I mean, they're making record profits, and that if they're going to start scaling back payroll, that's just owners pocketing and not paying the talent, and that, to me, is unacceptable. It's funny because I've said this several times this offseason. Albert Pujols, by the end of his career, will have made the right amount of money. It was just disproportionately spread to where he was incredibly overpaid for the Angels and he was incredibly underpaid for the Cardinals. And it used to, as long as they kept doing that with guys once they hit free agency, everything just worked out in the end and everybody was okay. You know, if you're looking at Carlos Correa making $550,000 last year, you could say, well, you're paying your dues. You're going to hit it big once you get to free agency. Well, now if they're going to start scaling back the free agent contracts, it makes it that much more egregious when somebody like Correa is not making that, or Chris Bryant, his MVP year, made just $1 million, and we say just, I know that's a lot of money to us, but he was worth probably $30 million to the Cubs in 2016, at least. And he made only around $1 million, but you kind of take it and pay your dues, because once Bryant gets the free agency, there comes $300 million. But again, if they're going to start scaling that back, they need to start balancing it and make it a better meritocracy to where players are paid what they're worth when they're worth it.
Well, how would that happen? Like, whose responsibility is that? Because the Players Association, like, they're going to look out more for the older players, if anything. Like, who's going to represent the up-and-comers in that way?
I mean, it's one idea I heard was restricted free agency after 3 years, which, for example, Bryant would have come up this year. And so maybe somebody can offer Bryant 10 years and $300 million or something, and then the Cubs have a chance to match that, which they would. But the problem there is there's small market teams now. One of the great things about the system before, when the owners were just overpaying the veterans and it made up for the younger years, one of the great things about the system was teams could keep their young talent for 6 or 7 years. If you lowered it to 3 and had restricted free agency, now the little guys are all going to get shut out. So I don't have a great answer there. I mean, I like the restricted free agent idea, but then you worry about some of the small market teams getting screwed over. So there's stuff to discuss, and they've got to find a way to figure it out. Maybe this was an anomaly. Maybe a lot of teams wanting to reset the luxury tax, like the Dodgers and Yankees next year with Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, Clayton Kershaw hitting free agency. Maybe everybody starts getting paid huge again, and this was just an anomaly. Let's hope that's the case.
Are we going to see any of these big-name guys that are free agents switch teams at the trade deadline?
Machado very well might. I don't see any way that the Orioles are going to keep him. Everybody thinks the Yankees are going to sign him. I mean, maybe Andujar or Gleyber Torres blow up and make it kind of a cost the Yankees don't need, but it seems like he's such a good fit for the Yankees. And other teams will be in on him, too. Like, the Phillies might be in on him, depending on what happens with Franco and or Kingery this year. You never know, but the Phillies probably are more for Bryce Harper. Harper, the Nationals will be contenders. They're not going to trade him. Kershaw, there's no way in the world the Dodgers will ever trade him. But I do think Machado could go somewhere, and it would be interesting if, say, the Indians jumped at it or something and traded Kipnis and reconfigured the, like, put Jose Ramirez at second. Maybe if they did something like that, that would be kind of fun.
Matt Snyder, CBSSports.com baseball writer. Other than, I think, Giancarlo Stanton with the Yankees being a player that'll have a lot of eyeballs on him, Ohtani on the Angels, I thought would be the player who'd have a lot of eyeballs on him, but the spring has not been good for him whatsoever. So what do you do with that situation?
Give him a chance to settle in here. I mean, I'm almost preemptively annoyed already about if he has a bad start, all the hot takes about how he's going to be a bust. I'm 23 years old. He's never played anywhere outside Japan. They only have one time zone there. He's going to be traveling across the country in all different time zones, having to adjust to this, in addition to adjusting to a completely different culture, playing with a bunch of guys he's never met before. That's a tough situation to put anybody in, much less a 23-year-old who is trying to be a pitcher and a hitter, which nobody else is trying to do. So I think we've got to be patient with this kid. I would probably expect he would have at least a bad first couple months before he kind of gets settled in and gets his feet beneath him. But yeah, he's going to probably be bad, and we're going to see a lot of overreactions here in the first few weeks. Do keep an eye on Kingery from the Phillies, but also Ronald Acuna with the Braves. They sent him down, but I think that was more like a Cubs sending Bryant down situation, where Acuna is going to come up pretty quickly. And also Nick Senzel with the Reds. I don't think he's that far away either. Those are some other good young studs to watch, along with Ohtani.
So we fast forward to October. Who are going to say be the final four teams left, and who's eventually going to win?
Well, there's a big seven. Yankees, Red Sox, Indians, Astros, Nationals, Cubs, Dodgers. I think it's pretty obvious to me that those are seven powerhouses. Anything can happen in October, but the smart money's picking two teams from that group. I want Cubs over Yankees. I think the Cubs are incredibly underrated heading into this year. If you look at how bad they were in the first half last year, but then they settled in the second half, how much better they are. And they had so many guys have down years who you expect to bounce back. Yu Darvish is better than Jake Arrieta. Tyler Chatwood was better than John Lackey. So I think a lot of people are even though they're picking them to win the Central, a lot of people are more just picking them like, oh, well, they're the best team there again, and then just forgetting about them in the playoffs. No, they're a power. I think the Dodgers do take a little bit of a step back, but hey, that's how good they were last year. Astros definitely could be there again. Like I said, pick any one of those teams from that seven to win it all, and pick any one of the other teams from the other league to win the pennant, and I think you're in good shape right there.
Hashtag Homer. Homer, you're picking the Cubs. That's your squad right there.
I didn't pick them last year, but I got them right in 2016, so I'm 1-for-1 so far. So maybe I'll be 2-for-2.
If we're going to eliminate the seven, if there's one team that's not in the seven, where would you go?
Man, that's tough. I mean, I had the Cardinals at 8th in the power rankings, but I don't have any confidence in them to advance far in the postseason. Maybe with the Blue Jays, if they got their rotation settled. Angels, like, if Garrett Richards stays healthy the whole season and Ohtani actually starts to pitch well and you get something from, like, Tyler Skaggs and Andrew Heaney, you could see that for being a very good playoff rotation. Blake Parker at the back end there with Cam Bedrosian could be a good 1-2 punch out of the bullpen, and their offense is way better. A full season of Justin Upton, hopefully a full season for Mike Trout. Now you added Zach Cozart, Ian Kinsler. I think I'll go with the Angels on that one. If it's somebody outside the seven, I'll go with the Angels.
Thanks. We always appreciate it, Matt. Great talking. I just wish you had better words for me.
I'm sorry, man. I didn't want to lie.
I didn't want you to lie, but I wish you had better stuff to say.
He's out here speaking the
truth.
Man.
All right. Thanks so much. Always enjoy visiting with Matt Snyder, even if he doesn't give me what I want.
Stop trying to lie. You don't enjoy him visiting when he's saying your Giants are about to be a non-contender in the Phillies. Phillies are going to be better than the Giants. I just can't wait. This will be great.
I'll give you my take on the Phillies. It's something that might even make it sound better than what he told you. Get the best of Sports Radio The Ticket with the must-have ticket app at iTunes or KTIK.com. Read social media posts, listen to live broadcasts like Boise State football games, featured interviews, conversations, and entire shows. It's an Idaho sports lover's dream. Download Sports Radio The Tickets app today. Our take on the coming baseball season, that's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Chris, I'm going to give you some good news. And this week we're going to spend quite a bit of time talking baseball with the season starting Thursday. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about what we would do if we were commissioner for a day and had unilateral powers. We could do whatever we wanted to do.
That's too much power for you, Bob. You had the absolute power within baseball. The game would never grow.
It would be stuck in a time machine. It would be tremendous.
Go back in the past, and we would never escape 1984.
But these young stars would like it because I would make sure they got the money that they deserve.
All right, we'll talk about this tomorrow. We'll have our whole list of things.
All right, I'm going to give...
What's your good news, though? I'm wanting these good news.
I have the Phillies as a team to watch to win the division. And here's my thinking. Washington gets off to a bad start. Maybe has some injuries. Maybe doesn't play as well as they could. You got a new manager that's never managed before. He's been a coach, Dave Martinez. But you fired Matt Williams and you fired Dusty Baker because flat out they haven't got to the World Series. You've got Bryce Harper who's playing out an option and, you know, if they're good, they're going to roll with him all the way and then hope they can sign him. But let's say things go south. I could see things really going south in Washington. And if Philadelphia's got their act together, which I think they're heading in that direction, I could see them stealing that division if Washington has issues and looks like they're not going to be able to do what they think they need to do to be able to move forward.
You're not the first person to say you think things can go south in Washington. Not always talking about baseball, though, in that same way. I'm hype. I mean, they just signed Scott Kingery to this deal, the Phillies, and you're right. Well, who is he, and why did he get a contract? It's like a 6-year deal. He, looking at his baseball reference page, I don't see the Major League Baseball section of it. It's because he hasn't played a game of Major League Baseball yet. Well, apparently, like some scouts, I saw Buster Olney tweet this out, that he's had people tell him that he's Dustin Pedroia with talent, which is really disrespectful to Dustin Pedroia because he's one of the better players in baseball for a good stretch there. You're saying he's just like Dustin Pedroia, except he has talent. Well, how in the world did Dustin Pedroia get to be as good as he is? He has to have some level of talent there. But what it is one of those almost taking advantage of the system. I think Houston signed a bunch of contracts like this. Not all of them have worked out, but you're basically betting on a player before they erupt. And if they do what you think they're going to do, and if he turns into a Dustin Pedroia-like versatile infielder who does have a bit of power but can hit for contact, you're having a value asset for a long time on an extremely team-friendly deal. I think he's only getting $24 million guaranteed from this, which is a lot of money for somebody who hasn't played a game of Major League Baseball yet, especially with the way the contract structures work these days, when Matt Snyder kind of explained it, where young players really get robbed when it comes to the opportunity to maximize their earning value. But he's really capping his earnings. If he becomes that dude, he's going to be a while before he gets to be a free agent, because there's a lot of player control in the back end on a very team-friendly deal. So I do like the fact that the Phillies were able to get this guy on a contract, because if he's good, this will really work out for him. And it seems like their GM is on the cutting edge and coming up with creative ways to get value assets on the team, Jake Arrieta being another one of those guys. Again, not the longest-term deal in the world and a lot of money, but if even the Phillies aren't even that good, he becomes a decent trade chip for another team to hop on. So I'm excited for this season from the Phillies' perspective, and you're giving me more reasons to be.
And the Astros, who are coming off a championship this year, I really like what they've done. They've kept their core together, and they add in a trade Gerrit Cole, who I thought was one of the better pitchers in the National League. I think Houston's better than they were this past year when they won.
So we should cancel the season then. If they're better than they were last year, and last year they were good enough to win the World Series, and what are we doing here?
Long season. Postseason can be very, very fickle depending on how certain matchups go. Your best starting pitcher can only pitch one game out of maybe four, and then you got to come back with others to fill in before you get them back. But I really like the Astros. I mean, assuming, again, baseball, long season, you got to stay healthy, and that's something the Giants didn't do last week.
There's one thing I disagree with what Matt Snyder said just about 10 minutes ago when he was on this show. I disagree with the labeling of, he says basically to hold off on judgment of Ohtani. To hold off on judgment, if he gets off to a slow start, you kind of have to be patient with him. He's 23 years old. Of course, the pitcher slash hitter for the Angels. I don't agree with just having to have the level of patience for the guy. Number one, he came in as somebody who was projected to be a guy to contribute immediately. This wasn't signing up for like a Cuban prospect that you don't expect to see time in the major leagues for a long time. No. Part of the appeal with this guy was he's coming over from Japan and major league ready right now. This wasn't supposed to be a project. So that's number one. Number two, when you're somebody who's trying to do two things at once, you can't afford to get off to a slow start, because the number one thing that'll come from it is, how about you focus on one, being good at one thing before you try to do two. If you come out the gates being really bad at both, what I would do is, somebody who's invested a lot of money in him, I'd be like, with the limited resource of time, there's not enough time in the day to have you get better at both. You need to be able to focus on one. And if your value of him was versatility of being able to hit and pitch, and you're bad at both, you need to focus on doing one.
And if he shows some sort of promise at one and is bad at the other, I think it's going to make it even more that the Angels will say, you know what, you look like a pretty good pitcher. Right now, your hitting is so-so. Let's make you an even better pitcher. Because I think, especially what they signed him for, the value, because of the fees coming over from, you know, he didn't get as much as he would have if he waited. Friendly contract, in my opinion, for the Angels. I would be happy with him if he's really good on just one or the other, not both.
Exactly. But when you have the name, the Babe Ruth of Japan, you had a 60-minute story. Why is 60 minutes getting so much time in this show? It's getting more than 60 minutes worth of time in this show. But yeah, he had his own little thing on 60 Minutes. What was it, last year or the year before? You don't come in and have a slow start and expect us to be patient with it. That's just not how it's going to work.
Couple things. I was shocked when he said the A's were going to be good, because from what I've seen, I don't think that's true. And the name that he didn't mention that I think has made a lot of moves, I'm surprised he didn't give the Brewers any love.
I mean, he was only on for 15 minutes.
I know.
You couldn't mention every team.
Couldn't. But those were a couple that I thought Milwaukee, they've made a good effort at trying to sign. We'll see if they can get to, you know, contend, maybe not beat the Cubs out, but contend for a wild card. You can win $1,000 without having to call Tony to play a parlay. Play 4K a day with four chances for you to win $1,000 every weekday. It starts on Thursday right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. You'll play at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. weekdays. Up next in the update, what wide receiver plans to follow the Le'Veon Bell plan of holding out if they don't get a new contract? Next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Ticket Sports Update sponsored by Stormore Sheds. Create a space of your own with a new shed, shop, or garage from Idaho's best-selling shop for over 25 years. See why for yourself. Stormore Sheds in Meridian. Well, boys' state gymnastics team won their fourth straight Mountain Range Gymnastics Conference title over the weekend, and they now know where they'll be going for the regional NCAAs. They'll be headed to the Columbus region. They'll be hosted at Ohio State University. Teams include UCLA, Arkansas, Boise State. That's your 1-2-3 seeds. And Ohio State, the 4 seed, will be the host.
A lot of non-1s and 2s hosting, although there are a couple that get a chance to host. Utah down the road will be a host as a 1, so will Alabama. Going to go over after the show today to get some audio with the gymnastics team. And one of the questions I want to ask is, how can you bid on it? How do you get it? Because Minnesota's hosting as a 4. Ohio State's hosting as a 4. NC State is hosting as a 5. Mm. So it looks like it's more of a maybe a money deal as far as how you get to host, or maybe what kind of crowds they think you're going to generate. But I think being a 3 seed with the host team being the 4, I guess it's probably better the host team's the 4. You might be better than them than the host team being the 2. But I think in order to finish in the top 2, it's going to be a little bit tougher.
It's a challenge. They're always up for it, but you're right, Bob. It's a difficult just looking at it from the onset, but this is a program that's still looking to get that next step of nationals. It's funny how often they're ranked inside the top 15, but just can't seem to get the right formula. And when you're 15, to be fair, I don't think you're expected. The way the draw works out is a 15. If you held true to form, I don't think the 15 is supposed to win and get to the nationals.
The top 12, you're supposed to be top 12, supposed to get there if the seeds help.
Well, according to Dennis Dodd of CBSSports.com, Gonzaga plans to announce their conference affiliation within the next 2 weeks. That's according to their AD, Mike Roth. That's what he told him. And Dodd explained that article a little further. He'll be on Caves and Prater today at 3:15. So
I find it interesting. You wonder, are they negotiating? Is this thing about money? Is this thing about, you know, competition? I wonder what's going to be the deciding factor for what Gonzaga decides to do.
Gonzaga, I mean, give them credit. They want to be the biggest person in the room right now. And they are, right? Like, they get to have power. The West Coast Conference out here messing up everything about their conference tournament. They try to fit Gonzaga within it. Mountain West out here begging, which, hey, they probably should, right? Because that makes a significant difference. Nice to feel wanted, right? They're like the number one recruit in the country right now.
Mm-hmm. Got to take advantage of it when you got a chance to make the deal as a free agent, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, Chris, it's 2:36, and we haven't discussed this, so I'll let you have the floor here for a couple minutes. It was official over the weekend. The 76ers locked up a playoff spot. I don't know how you let us go to 2:36 without talking about this.
Because I just trust the process, and I don't even care if you were one of the people who ripped it, people who just didn't understand. I was trying to tell y'all, but now that they've done it, there's no denying it. There's no denying how right I was. No denying how right the process was. Now, I didn't think they'd be this good, though. I thought they'd win 38. That was my number at the beginning of the year. I said it on this show, 38 games. I think,
which would be slightly under 500.
Yes, it would be slightly under 500, and I thought they would be, if a playoff team would be around the 8th spot, and they'd get it within like the last week of the year. I did not think they'd clinch it with still 3 weeks left. They'd be significantly over 500. Joel Embiid would play this much. At 30 minutes a game, he's out here with like 61 games played. I did not think that would happen. Ben Simmons thought he'd be good. He is really good already, and it's just his first year, and he still doesn't even really know how to shoot right now. And they're doing this without the number one pick in the draft.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. If I'd have told you the little that Fultz to nothing that he's contributed for this year, what would you have guessed for the win total?
Well, I mean,
20?
Probably, not 20. Probably like a 36-ish. 30,
so I would mean, have only, you would have
yeah,
only...
Rookie point guards, they rarely generate significant value to winning teams. Like, that's just how it works in the NBA. Especially, you know, at that, like, you know, Lonzo Ball, how many wins the Lakers? Has he made that much of a difference with the Lakers in their win total? Like, Kyrie Irving, his first year with the Cavs, did he make a significant difference to their win total? No. So, rookie point guards. But the thing that I was expecting is to see the flashes, right? Like,
all right, they might not win every game. They might be a little bit under 500. But when it's looking good, okay, this is what it looks like. And now you know what to build on and what to surround them with. But, like, should I even say it? All right, if I look at the Eastern Conference standings, Toronto, reasons to doubt them because of their previous playoff failure. Boston, Kyrie Irving, looks like he's going to be out at least the first round of the playoffs. Have y'all seen Cleveland play?
They still have LeBron.
They still have LeBron, but their defense is really shaky. And Philly's right next in the standings. They're at 4 in the East. Now, again, playoffs are a whole different beast. Ben Simmons' weakness are going to be highlighted, and Embiid's weakness of being a turnover-prone center is going to be highlighted because they'll double him in ways that he's never seen before. So, like, they have steps to go before they're one of the teams that should be expected to win playoff rounds. But this is really enjoyable. They're a lot better than I thought they'd be.
All right, so now let's look forward. You're going to make the playoffs, so now let's get greedy, Chris. Right now they're sitting at the 4, which would mean they would get a home court series against the 5. How important to advancing is staying in the 4 position right now? Because if you drop to the 6, you might have to tangle with Cleveland in the first round. And I don't think you're going to drop to 7 or 8, but if they did, then you got to face one of the top 2 seeds in the conference.
In a way, I think I'd rather face Cleveland in the first round because there's a whole LeBron angle if he could be a Sixer next year with this. But, like, number 2, they're not great defensively. And if Kevin Love plays center, that's going to be tough for Embiid. But they've beaten Cleveland this year before. I don't think it's unrealistic for them to win. And, like, what better way for you to learn? You're an up-and-coming team. To face LeBron in a playoff series, I think, is great. Like, I think that is a very helpful experience to have run into LeBron, especially if, again, you don't think they're going to win a title this year. For Simmons to have to defend LeBron James and Covington to have to defend LeBron for a 7-game series, I think is very valuable. So if your goal, though, is to advance as far as possible, moving up to number 3 is actually the key because they're only a game back at Cleveland, still have a head-to-head game against them. That also means you're on the same side of the bracket with Boston, who, again, Kyrie Irving hurt. Will he play by then? We don't know. You're on the opposite side of the bracket of Toronto. You move up to 3. It means Cleveland goes down to the 4. You only have to face one of Toronto and Cleveland instead of both. So, ideally, you want to move up to 3.
Indiana, Washington, Milwaukee, Miami appear to be the bottom half. Mm-hmm. Is there one team in that 4 that they would match up best with? And is there somebody you'd say, I don't want to see?
Probably match up best with Indiana, even though they lost to Indiana, their only home loss in the new year. But I just think over a 7-game series, they're probably more talented. Worst within that group, probably Miami, because they got Wade, been through battles. Coach Spoelstra is excellent. And Whiteside and Embiid, like if there's a guy who's physically at least big enough to defend Embiid for a series without a double team, it's him. So I think that'd be the worst team.
Well, the New York Giants struggled last year. That's part of the reason they have the number 2 overall pick. And a big part of that is the fact that Odell Beckham Jr. missed much of the season with a broken ankle. And they could be out there receiver long term. Over the weekend, Giants co-owner was talking about Odell Beckham Jr., who's had his name in the news over the offseason. And while he didn't say the Giants were looking to trade him, he didn't really give him the vote of confidence that it was unattainable to get Odell Beckham Jr. away from the Giants.
We're certainly not shopping them, if that's what you're asking. But again, when you're coming off a season where you're 3-13 and played as poorly as we played, then I wouldn't say that anybody's untouchable.
Fair response. Nobody's untouchable. If the Browns say, hey, I don't care about building a franchise. I want to take our 2 draft, number 1 and number 4, and take Odell Beckham instead of the 1 and 4. What do they have? 1 and 4, right?
Yep.
It's not 3. Then absolutely do that trade for the Giants. Don't close the door on it. But Beckham's your top player, your number 1 asset on the team, and you shouldn't be actively looking to trade him. He hasn't done anything criminally wrong. He's just been really silly.
Is there somebody, if you were the Giants, would you take 1 or 4?
Well, you have 2.
Right, but I'm saying, would you get rid of Beckham? And I'm not saying Cleveland
would
do it.
I would take.
But if somebody offered you
for the number 1 pick in the draft,
what about for the number 4 pick in the draft?
Probably not. No, probably because you're Beckham. How many years do you have him? Reasonable, like maybe 1 more year.
This is his last year on his rookie.
Yeah. And then he has to take up your highest salary. You know what? I would try to trade him for the number 4 pick in the draft.
Which Beckham, by the way, speaking of his contract, he said today he has no plans to play unless he gets a new deal. We'll see if that's true, but that's what he said.
And his new deal is going to be, he said he wants to be the highest paid player in the NFL.
Yeah.
Highest paid in the NFL, not receiver.
No. Yeah, no, he wants top dollar. Yeah, he wants to blow the market up.
Hold out. Hold out, because you're not getting it.
And real quick, then the sports update. Chris, have you ordered your Sister Jean bobblehead yet?
No. It's funny. You can make Sister Jean bobbleheads, but we can't make Custer bobbleheads.
No, because Sister Jean's not an NCAA player. Have you ordered your Sister Jean shirt yet?
What are they Sister selling Jean it for?
I'm not sure what the bobbleheads are going for yet. I'll have to look
20,
it up.
20, 30?
There's a case to be made that Sister Jean is exactly what's wrong with college athletics, but like, who's going to listen to somebody say that, you know, a nun is the worst thing about college athletics?
You tell me you're not going to get your shirt that says and nun? Play on and one, and nun? No, Chris?
This is not good. I'm just saying, this is not good for college athletics.
And Chris, how much of this is that the Sister Jean's team is the only one that we can tell doesn't have radio?
Do they still not have radio? Have we looked at their game notes recently? Like, have they adopted a radio announcer?
I looked at it for the regionals. And, I mean, the first two rounds, and I didn't see a radio broadcast.
I'll do it. Send me there. I'll do it.
You and Sister Jean on the call.
Yes, I wouldn't be able to get a word in. She'd take over the broadcast. Yeah. What, I'm supposed to talk when Sister Jean's on the broadcast? No, you just got to lay out and let her do her thing.
$25.
$25 for the bobblehead? Yeah. That's about right.
They're $75 on eBay for ones from 2013. So you're getting
already done one.
They've done one and they're making new ones because of her popularity. Mm.
And who's the guy, Richardson, the other day who hit all them shots? Where's his bobblehead?
He doesn't have one. That'd be illegal benefits. That'd be illegal, Chris.
So... Sister Jean, there. Certainly charismatic. Custer, Richardson, they out here getting buckets.
She apparently gives scouting reports during team prayers, though, so she has some benefit to the team, Chris, on the basketball floor.
You know what I read, which to me, I wouldn't have thought girls' high school basketball would go back that far, but it said she played girls' high school basketball in San Francisco growing up.
I don't doubt that. She probably was a baller.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything because there's nothing to be gained from being critical of Sister Jean.
She has it going on. She's going to get a free trip to San Antonio. Her team's living large.
Nothing to be
gained. Doing it all. Win $1,000 without having to call Tony to play a parlay. Play 4K a day with four chances for you to win $1,000 every weekday starting this Thursday. Right here on Sports Radio, The Ticket. You can play at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. all weekdays. Up next, quick picks. We'll review what we had over the weekend. Also talk about some things we've learned on today's show on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Time to find out what we learned on Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris. It's brought to you by Prime Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist. High-quality bowling balls, bags, accessories located right inside Westies Garden Lanes in Garden City. Before we get to what we learned, we can go over what we now know, and that Chris cannot pick basketball teams in the March Madness. Bob, of course, won Thursday, and then Bob came out with the clean sweep 4-0 Friday. Kansas over Clemson, Villanova over West Virginia, Duke over Syracuse, and Texas Tech over Purdue. Chris got one right.
Yeah, well, my strategy for picking games on Friday was the strategy that worked very well if you were in your bracket pool, for especially the left side of the bracket, and I chose based on the color of the teams. You know, because like those were the people who were out here in first place of the bracket. There are people who, you know, just, all right, I like
people
the mascots.
Usually choose on mascots.
Or colors. Sometimes color.
I thought you were going to say we go with colors. Don't pick the white jersey because that team was always losing on the left side.
True. I just was school colors. And I had my Let's Go Orange Day. You know, Syracuse, school I went to. They were playing on Friday. They were wearing orange. The other game that was going on, Kansas and Clemson, one of those teams was wearing orange against a team that was wearing blue. So I was like, all right, let's just go orange throughout the day. And orange didn't have the greatest of days. So
yeah, I think in the Elite Eight, Chris, you were 1-for-7.
So that's why one day I tried to pick with logic and reason, so I didn't work out very well. So I went with colors the next thing, and that didn't work out too. So what should I do next?
Flip a coin?
Pick them out of a hat?
Just choose the scarier mascot?
There's a lot of different ways to do
it. I'm assuming based off this, your bracket is toasted.
Yeah, I still have my champion, though. My champion's still alive.
The fact you didn't pick Syracuse just means you're a bad alumni, Chris.
I mean, I thought
he did pick Syracuse.
Not to win the championship, but Villanova.
to win the championship. My home city. See, you know, Philadelphia, we're right now in a sports renaissance, I'm telling you. Villanova, by the way, Jerry Wright running Villanova better than any other coaches running any other school. You guys disagree with that?
Sister Jean's doing a great job running Loyola Chicago.
Sister Jean is not the coach.
I couldn't even name
Sister
the
Jean
coach
is not the athletic
Chicago.
Director. Sister Jean is not a player.
She's doing a great job running that program.
Y'all disagree with that statement or no? Jay Wright runs Villanova better than any coach is running any program right now.
Don't you think, though, looking at them, that they have the best chance all season long of giving you a good performance?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem like they spike. Doesn't seem like they're also going to have a clinker, if you will.
They're sustainable. They have players of different classes. It's not like they have one monster recruiting class of a bunch of freshmen, then have to replenish it the next year. You know, they have red shirts. Like, they're a sustainable program that is dominant year after year, one seeds, 30 wins. Now, Final Four, two of the last 3 years. There's no coach that's doing a better job at a school than what Jay Wright is doing with Villanova. And Philadelphia has the defending Super Bowl champions, the Philadelphia Eagles. Nova's won a championship within the last 3 years and won it 2 years ago. They're going to win it this year. At least they could. They're in a position to. Sixers in the playoffs. Philly's climbing up. I'm telling you. You thought Boston was obnoxious when they were out here? All their teams successful? Philly about to have that.
A repick on the four that are left, you would go Villanova? I certainly would. You had them from the beginning.
Yeah. But
to me, they look, I don't know, I think they look the best team that's left.
I had to go with Kansas because I had them from the beginning. So I can't change on my bracket. But we'll see. Well, one thing, Bob had a great day picking Friday, and then as soon as the show ended Friday, he had a terrible Friday because I was the one to inform him that Madison Bumgarner took a line drive off his pinky. Later, they learned that it was a broken pinky. He'll be out. What was it, 4 to 6 weeks, what they've said?
Well, Bob? I think it's going to be more like 2 months.
That's what they've said. Four to six.
It's going to be longer than that by the time he gets back in shape. Can I say that if we could have the pinky get unbroken, I'd be more than happy to have gone 0-8 in the picking of college basketball.
I thought you were going to say you would take the broken pinky.
I might. What do I need? I can do my show. You know?
I mean, somebody's pinky has to be broken here. Bob is willing to
take the pinky.
I'm with that with Embiid, by the way. Any injury potentially that Joel Embiid would suffer.
Would you take Markelle Fultz's
give it
injury?
To me. I mean, I do need the right. You know, his shoulder seems like
it's
I mean,
would
really
you take the
deal.
Ability to never be able to play basketball? Or at least not for a year?
Well, for me, I would do that because I never could play. So
Bob would take the broken pinky.
I also never pitched either,
shoulder turning into Markelle Fultz's shoulder if it meant that he could play basketball next year.
Bob would take the dirt bike injury. He'd take the quad injury.
As long as
it
I
seems
could
like Bob would have a lot
game.
More exciting of a life if he had all these Madison Bumgarner injuries. He's all of a sudden taking line drives. He's out here on a dirt bike.
You know what? If I could do that, I could probably get myself on the Giant broadcast because they'd feel so beholden to me that I needed to be on there, right?
Yeah, as long as Madison Bumgarner doesn't have a sore throat that now Bob
That'd
all of a sudden can't broadcast.
Probably.
He can't shake through it. It's strep throat over here. That's the only thing that can hold him back.
Well, that's all we've got today. So,
yeah, you really made me mad on Friday. You were the guy that was the bearer of bad news. And you know what happened in the olden days? Usually it was off with their heads.
I thought you already knew him.
No, I did not know. You ruined my weekend. Ruined it. Tomorrow, maybe I'll be mad. Commissioner for a day. Chris and I will try to straighten out baseball. That'll be one of our topics tomorrow. Case and Prater coming up next. Dennis Dodd on the Mountain West in Gonzaga. Keep it tuned to Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.